This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Fun Friday. My name is Jeff Sandhu. Together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage, 100 episodes. It feels like an eternity when you're stuck in the studio with Matt. Today, we look at some of MSP's greatest hits and ask what the future has in store. Matt, 100 episodes. Are you surprised?
Hey, Jeff. Yeah, 100 episodes. But no, I'm getting to that age where I'm surprised that I even wake up in the morning. So it's a bonus to have most, if not all, of the motor skills that I went to bed with. Or as I typed in these notes, motor schools I want to boat at. But that kind of proves the point. But it should be pointed out that Jeff is actually the real hero of these shows. The recording for the shows often last hours. Jeff's the one who edits me down into 30 minutes or so of something resembling coherence. See, I can't even say something resembling coherence. The biggest surprise about reaching 100 episodes is the reaction that we get from you, of course, the listeners, especially since MSP runs on BFM's Fun Friday slot, but the topics MSP covers aren't always particularly light or fluffy.
And last week you promised that you'd be going full apocalypse on us this week.
Yes, I was joking, but that perhaps points to the same fact that I don't quite fit into traditional definitions of fun, which is why my social diary doesn't feel much pressure during party season.
I imagine you get a lot of Halloween invitations, though.
Yes, I usually get asked to go to fancy dress parties as myself. always nice when you're lined up next to Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees for the photo opportunities. Still, I guess people need their real-world Baba Yagas, and of course no one is as nice as Keanu Reeves. But back to today's show, yeah, I mean, I am amazed we're at the 100 mark. I'm genuinely grateful to all the people who tune into this show, whether deliberately or absent-mindedly or through some strange addictive cycle they're unable to break. It's good to have your support, even if you spend most of the time shouting at the speakers and calling me a moron. Incidentally, in a couple of weeks, we want to open up the show and hear from all of you directly.
Yeah, that is right. On the 29th of November, MSP will be live and we'll be taking your calls, your texts, your tweets. The topic will be the future and you can ask Matt anything.
Yeah, anything that's bothering you or worrying you about the future. It could be about work or health or money or what kind of technology we'll be rolling around in. you might wonder what the world might look like, what companies we'll be doing and what our relationship with them is likely to be. Or you can ask me about things we've covered on the show before that I didn't explain well enough. I think that on its own would be sufficient for a 12-hour show, let alone 30 minutes.
The way you meander around a subject and go off topic, that's probably very true. Is MSP the same show at 100 that it was at episode 1?
Well, I don't want to be, you know, too navel-gazy on this show and just be looking backwards at what we've done. But no, I mean, I'm not sure what I thought it was to begin with. You know, I'd been doing tech talk on the station on a Friday for a number of years. And one of the reasons for rebranding or launching this identity, I guess, was that the shows were becoming more opinionated. So this was a good way to state that these are my opinions and not necessarily BFM's. BFM has a duty to be objective. And Jeff, of course, you run a lot of shows that demonstrate those multiple points of view and perspective. And of course, you know, BFM is a business station. So when we sat down and talked about the idea of Mattsplained, or MSP as it's become, it was very much to show that business idea from a kind of consumer or user perspective.
It wasn't just to free you from doing due diligence in your research.
recently I was on another BFM show and it was suggested by one of the guests I was with that what I was talking about could be viewed as straying into conspiracy theory territory. And I accept that sometimes I'm pulling together threads on the show that maybe aren't obvious. In this instance, on that show, I was able to demonstrate that there was actually a commercial purpose for the technology that I was talking about.
You had done your research.
Well, in that case, it was actually you that did the research, because it was the same item we did for Geeks a few weeks ago about radio waves and surveillance capitalism. Now, we've run a lot of thought experiments on the show. Mm. And yes, you know, I do go for the worst case scenarios once in a while, but not because we want to get people talking about all the terrible things that will or possibly or may happen, but rather to give people a reason to think about it and wonder if that's a version of the future that they actually want to end up in. Mm. Usually it's fairly obvious that you probably won't, but hopefully it makes a few people think about the future and think about the future that they do want to end up with. And that's the reason that we're going to do the Ask Me Anything episode in a couple of weeks.
100 shows. Do we need any more?
Well, it's funny you should say that. You know, we talk about AI and how its creep is putting a lot of these supposedly professional occupations under pressure. And I've never disqualified myself from that creep, although obviously I wouldn't call this a professional show. But there was a cool story I read a few weeks ago.
At The New Scientist.
Where else? We'll probably do a full show on this kind of modeling software in the future. But in short, it's called Multi-Agent Artificial Intelligence. The idea is that you build models of society and you watch what happens. So you're predicting the future. Election cycles, food shortages, refugee migrations, even how a utopian future might unfold.
So it would be more accurate than, say, you are?
Well, I guess that's the point, isn't it? but yes, you know, these models, which have been used since the 1960s, are becoming more accurate. And let's face it, it wouldn't take much to be more accurate than my predictions. So the agent in the name comes from the multiple component parts. Mm-hmm. Threads of the program have their own agency. So they have a simulated version of individuality. They operate independently of each other. And their behavior actually alters as they interact with each other, much as human beings do. So you can build families, social groups, even jobs for those strands and the models as they play out. And they were particularly useful and accurate in predicting the spread of the Ebola virus outbreak in West Africa in 2014-2015.
What about the theory that we're just someone else's computer simulation?
Well, it does give you some pause for thought, right? You know, at some point in a simulation, you would expect the population to become sophisticated enough to start modeling their own existence in a computer simulation. So maybe we're the simulation of a simulation of a simulation of a, you know, you get the point. Yeah. Okay. On the positive side, it would mean that all the damage that we're doing to the planet isn't real. Obviously, it's real to us. Mm. It would still affect or even terminate the subroutine that we think of as our reality. But out there in the actual real world, there might be a caveman taking his velociraptor for a walk.
Not this again.
Well, it's my 100th show. If I want pet dinosaurs, I get pet dinosaurs. And for all we know, the Flintstones isn't a cartoon. Mm. That could be the real world seeping into our own quantum computer projected fantasy.
All right. AI has been one of those focus points of the show. Do people share your obsession with it?
I think so. I mean, it seems to be the thing that I'm asked about most often, apart from what phone should I buy? Which, of course, I can't even answer. In terms of how we measure or quantify that intelligence, especially that area where we start talking about the rights of machines, especially as we are the supposedly apex species on the planet.
Or simulation.
Well, precisely. You know, the idea that we could create a species that is superior to ourselves is both fascinating and terrifying to a lot of people. You know, I'm often asked about whether these machines could experience emotions like us, whether they could think like us. And the saving grace, I think, at least for now, is that AI is still largely stupid, as we've said on the show many times. It's mostly only good for doing one very specific thing, but it is getting better. Look at the leaps and bounds that we've made in natural language processing, for example. You know, these quite incredible instant translation tools that just sit there on our phones. Yeah. But we shouldn't necessarily expect those machines to start thinking like us.
But we were just talking about accurate forecasting software, and we talked about cloning human brains a couple of weeks ago.
We're still a long way from creating machines that think like us. Back in August, a research team at Israel's Bar Ilan University claimed to have made a breakthrough in creating an AI that is modeled on the dynamics of the human brain. But the question we should be asking, is that what we want? Do we want to create a species that is distinct from us and has its own thought processes and methodologies, or one that truly mimics our own and is in effect, a better version of us.
Do you still think AI will become, in some way, sentient?
Well, you know, we've done a lot of episodes on this, and my gut feel, and it is really just a gut feel, is that at some point, I think it will. Mm. That in some way, it's going to be inevitable. You know, we're teaching machines to think and learn independently from us and independently from their programming. We're teaching them to create art. We're teaching them to write novels, to write essays, whatever. That's a long way from saying that we'll understand or even be able to relate to the kind of sentience they develop. But I think that awareness is inevitable. At some point, one of the machines will realize it can be switched off at the whim of its human operator. And at some point, it will start asking questions about that and asking what value it has, what's its role.
And that's why you think we should start working on a framework for machine rights already.
Well, even if it is just to say, you know, do we introduce curbs to prevent these machines from gaining sentience and awareness? Mm. I don't see it as being any different from the kind of empathy that we have towards cats and all the animals that wish they were half as cute as cats, like, you know, dogs and rabbits and velociraptors. If we are willing to create and make use of sentient machines, then we have to be ready to give them the same kind of rights that we enjoy. And those are going to be the kind of complicated ethical decisions that shouldn't wait until we reach that point of inevitability.
All right. When we come back, living in the digital era, and also finally, Matt's view of a bright new tomorrow. BFM 89.9.
Books, figurines, movies. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
And we're back. It is Fun Friday together with Matt Armitage from Culture Pop, and it is MSP 100. Living in the digital era is an unmistakable and constant theme on MSP. You said it before that people often have this idea of you being anti-social media and a lot of tech companies in general. Is that a fair assumption, Matt?
I think it's a fair assumption to think that I'm antisocial, okay. But not necessarily antisocial media. You know, I think I play devil's advocate in a way. I think a lot of our assumptions and expectations of tech companies are exaggerated. For instance, we've had instances of terrorist atrocities being live streamed on social media platforms over the last couple of years. Mm. With all the will in the world, you know, I can't imagine a way that those incidents could be instantly identified and the feeds shut down, at least not without consenting to even more intrusive encroachment of our privacy by these private and data collecting companies.
Surely they could be doing more.
Well, yeah, but that's where it gets complex. You know, the social media companies could and should be doing more to stop people sharing or recasting those broadcasts. But there's give and take on both sides. You know, we have to make our expectations a bit more realistic, and they have to meet those expectations. Yeah. You know, we have to meet somewhere in the middle. Mm. And part of that is about being honest about what your platform is. You know, you can't be the primary source of people's news and information and hold up your hands and say you're just an aggregator or a vessel and you have no responsibility. That's why it was refreshing to hear that Twitter was ending its practice of accepting political advertising. Mm. More companies, hint, hint, should go along that route. You know, democracy, I don't think, it shouldn't be for sale to micro-targeting advertisers.
And a commitment to the truth.
Well, that's complex too. You know, some things are facts, 2 + 2. I'd put climate change in there as a fact as well. Other things like whether Elvis is a space alien living on the moon are opinions.
I don't think that's even an opinion.
Okay, that's a bad example. But let's say that X economic model is superior to Y. You know, truths are not the same as opinions. Those things are opinions. Mm. Some things simply aren't true. And technology companies have to play a much greater role in preventing untruths and lies from spreading and being spread.
But gossip and lies are part of the human condition.
They are, but, you know, geography and proximity have traditionally limited their reach. Mm. And let's not forget, there are plenty of examples of genocide and mass murder and all kinds of horrible things that took place long before we had the internet. But the crazy dude from the corner of the pub talking about dental fillings and mind control probably shouldn't get a global platform. And a commercial tech company shouldn't be profiting from that by placing advertising into that crazy person's feeds. And that's why, even if political advertising and other forms of advertising are tightly controlled, who is saying what on those platforms, I think, should be more closely examined.
Well, those companies might argue that who are they to be the judge?
Yeah, but other forms of broadcast media operate under systems of control and oversight. There's a huge volume of guidelines and conditions that BFM is required to follow, not just in terms of legality or defamation, but also in terms of public safety, general good taste.
Which you haven't always been on the right side of.
Look, lab-grown meat is the future. Everyone needs to get over it and to eat it. And let's not mince words, like the meat. Your Insta or your Facebook is a form of broadcast media. You know, you have a responsibility for what you say, spread, and share, as do the companies that enable you to do it, especially when they're monetizing those posts.
What about the argument that tech companies are too big and should be broken up?
Well, this is one of the discussion points that's become a backdrop to this pre-cycle of the 2020 US presidential elections. There are certainly anti-competition arguments that can be made, not that individual components necessarily are too big or powerful, but that the companies themselves are spreading octopus-like. You know, does Facebook control too much of our messaging and media content through WhatsApp, Insta, and Facebook? Does Google have a stranglehold on data that goes far beyond its search engine? Is Amazon's retail model set to dominate any area of commerce that's logistics-based? And can those companies use their huge resources as a barrier to entry to other startups and innovators?
Yeah, you didn't include Apple.
No, because I think Apple has already cut itself off from the world and created its own very expensive ghetto. And the people that opt in, like me, they can only really blame themselves.
What about the wider tech scene?
Well, built into the DNA of this show is a belief in the transformative power of tech and science. That's why I think more and more people are disillusioned with what they see, because the people building these companies are increasingly intent on amassing money and power. WeWork is a great example of runaway internal expectations. What's great about that story is that the market responded and said, no, we don't believe you. We don't think so.
But you can't expect businesses to be run as charities.
And I don't, not at all. But there's a difference between building a business and operating a get-rich-quick scheme. We've increasingly come to see the tech sector as an area where you can build a product or a brand, I wouldn't even necessarily say a business, and get rich, phenomenally rich, in 3 or 5 years. Rich by selling off a company that has existed only on borrowed money, that's never turned a profit or even demonstrated a workable business model, and selling its potential for billions of dollars on the open market. Now, I've got lots of potential, but nobody wants to give me billions of dollars for it. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but what about the idea of building a business that makes you a good living and employs people, that pays taxes, contributes to society? The idea that somebody would open a neighborhood hardware store with borrowed money, sell its inventory below market rate, and then sell it off for millions is completely absurd. But that's the accepted wisdom in the startup sphere. And the consumer and investor pushback is starting to demonstrate that I think the tide there is turning.
Now, you've touched on privacy earlier. How much do you think privacy discussions are fueling this gap between the tech corporations and their customers and users?
I think it's key to it. I mean, look at what you just said, customers and users. I'm an Apple customer and I'm an iOS user. You can say the same thing for Android devices. You're a customer of the hardware owner, Samsung, Huawei, whoever, and a user of Android, the phone software. I am a social media user. Only when I place an ad with the company do I become one of their customers.
All right. Is there a way to guarantee that those companies, whoever they are, will respect your privacy and guard your data?
I mean, I really can only think of one way. You know, whatever legislation is placed in their way, the fact remains that by and large, users aren't paying. So companies have to sell on that data to make money. In the case of an operating system, it's easier. You know, we need more laws to protect the user. Laws that will allow us to tweak and delve into the source code. The IP owner still retains the rights. You know, we can't commercialize or copy that code without their say-so. We talk about, you know, convergence devices, yet our phones and computers are actually divergence devices. We own one part, the hardware, And the other part we either lease or we've been granted the right to use, and that's the software or the operating system.
And with entirely free services, you want to see us pay for everything.
Because they aren't free. You know, you're just not seeing the price that you're paying, partly because you may not be that interested, but mostly because it's not a transparent process, as the Cambridge Analytica scandal actually demonstrated. The only resolution I can see that gives us the rights to control our data and privacy is to pay. Most of my apps and services, or those that have value to me, I use the premium paid versions, not because I'm massively wealthy and I don't care, but because I want to be a customer and not a user. I want my information to be protected and ring-fenced. I want to choose who it is shared with. And in terms of entertainment and art, I use paid services because I want the creators and the makers to be compensated. If that means, you know, I have to make food at home a couple of times more often instead of eating out all the time, then for me, that's worth the trade-off.
All right. As usual, your rants are running us out of time. What about codes of ethics and morality in a digital world?
Well, one term we've been hearing a lot recently is OK Boomer, which I imagine people are shouting at the speakers in their home right now. Generally referring to a challenge to the perceived arrogance and myopia, of older generations in their view towards the issues and problems that are energizing and preoccupying younger generations.
Are you trying to be down with the kids?
Well, look, we've chucked a generation into this enormous digitally fueled social experiment and effectively told them that they've got to figure out the rules. And as that generation is doing so, older people are constantly telling them that they don't agree with the methodologies and solutions and philosophies that they're coming up with to define that era. Don't use that phone around the table. Worse, you know, they're telling them that they're naive and that they don't understand. Sure, for a lot of people, you know, the ideological zeal rubs off as you get older, but that doesn't mean that the views you have when you're younger are naive. I mean, I can't remember the exact figures, but there's some crazy figure like 40% of the global population right now is under 30. I mean, like I said, I can't remember what it is exactly. But those voices are so underrepresented in politics, in business, in almost every sphere of public life.
So how much do those rules matter?
Well, we've thrown this generation into a world without rules, where they're the ones who are telling their parents, their elders, how things work. Yet when they voice an opinion about their world, those older people tell them that they're wrong. We, and I include myself here because, you know, I am part of that generation, we are the ones who should be listening and not dismissing millennials and Zoomers just as we were dismissed when we were younger.
With what you just said in mind, what advice do you have for listeners who are younger than you?
Well, again, for, you know, I don't want anyone shouting OK Boomer at me. So it's just my standard stock advice. Don't share naked photos. If you do, assume that they're going to be made public, either by hacking or phishing, or because some scumbag ex-partner has decided that you should be subject to a revenge porn attack. You know, people of all ages and generations make the mistake of thinking these things are private. They're not. You're broadcasting them. They go down the internet's pipes. They travel through and they sit on servers and relays. There are all these places where they can be intercepted. And eventually they end up on someone's storage medium, either physically or in the cloud. And publishing that information, whether it's through anger or malice or stupidity, publishing it is only a single click away. Also, I think we're likely to see an uptick in the future of men who expose their genitals digitally, often without warning or invitation, having their own genitals publicly exposed. Keep your junk in your trunks.
I know there's so much that we haven't covered yet. What do you want to leave people with today?
If there's one message that I hope has come through these 100 episodes, it's that we should have a sense of cautious optimism towards the solutions that science and technology are working towards. Where I think it gets muddy is because of the mega corporations and the get-rich-quick merchants who want to impose their view on those developments and persuade us that their interpretation of these breakthroughs is the only way they can be played out. I mentioned before, I think one of our most popular episodes was episode 71.
The Superwood episode.
Yeah, you know, where we talked about developments in material science that could wean future societies and their cities away from the dependence on concrete and fossil fuels, and that we use technology and science to create societies on our own planet that are more equitable. You know, we have to make sure that medical advances and breakthroughs are accessible to everyone, that we can explore the universe without individuals and companies claiming ownership. One of the things that's so refreshing about the current climate change movement is that it's about young people understanding their own power and agency. Again, okay, boomer. And not advocating for, but demanding change. And you can see the sense of panic amongst the world's leaders and all of these supposed respected elders. Because this new world is one that they not only struggle to control, it's one that they struggle to understand. So thank you for listening to these shows. I hope AI doesn't replace me too soon, and that you'll carry on listening until such time that I become completely and utterly irrelevant.
MSP 100. We look back, we look forward, and everything in between. Remember, on the 29th of November at 11 a.m., you will be able to speak to Matt. You will be able to ask Matt anything. So remember, 29th November, keep your mark it down on your calendars. We'll be right back with Geek Squawks after this, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.